You're listening to The Broken Meeple Show, a podcast that speaks passionately about board games for the benefit of those who play them. My name's Luke Hector, best known for the Broken Meeple YouTube channel, and I'm an everyday gamer just like you. And I'll be talking about reviews, top 10s, and just about anything that connects me to board games, as long as I have a tea or coffee in hand, that is. So grab a cup, relax, and enjoy. And remember, it's only a game. Hi everybody, welcome to another podcast episode. I believe this is number 89, yeah, stop losing count. I wonder what I'll do when I get to 100, not sure. But this is on the 10th of March, 24. It is Mother's Day in the UK, so happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there. And yes, I have not forgotten to wish my mum happy Mother's Day. It's just, they live back in Somerset, I live in Portsmouth way, so yeah, we're like 2.5 hours away from each other, so I'm not going back to visit, but sent her a card, sent her stuff, and we'll obviously ring her later, so don't worry, I've not forgotten my my duties as a loving son. All right, but happy Mother's Day to everybody out there. So what's been happening generally with me? But not a huge amount, really. I mean, I went on the cruise a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, probably was a couple of weeks ago I came back from that. It was like a 5-nighter to the Netherlands. It was decent. It was a good little de-stress opportunity just to forget about everything. I mean, I had some internet while I was there, so I could check on the bits and bobs. But for the most part, I was shutting myself off from work, from social stuff, from the blog, all kinds of bits, and just forgetting even about board games in general. Like, I didn't play a single game out there, not even on my phone, not a little card filler. I even took some filler card games with me, but I just couldn't be bothered to bring them out because I just thought, you know what, I need just a week away from games and stuff. And yeah, I think sometimes you do need to detox like that. But yeah, it was decent. I think I'm kind of bored with the Netherlands now, though. Not to say the Netherlands aren't fun places to go. I had a great time going to Rotterdam Zoo. That was a really good day out. I really enjoyed that. And the beer tasting the previous night, as much as the weather was not kind to us wandering around in the rain, the beers were certainly nice to try, a couple of breweries in Rotterdam. But the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam, I get why it's there. I get that, he's an icon in art history and stuff like that. But I was kind of bored, honestly. I'm not a massive art fan, period. I mean, I went around Rijks Museum last year and loved the art in there. Some of the art pieces in the Rijks Museum are jaw-droppingly gorgeous, and particularly the scenery shots, which is kind of like the type of art I tend to go for. I like landscapes. I don't really care about portraits. Van Gogh's style is just not really a style I go for, and there was just some stuff dotted around that museum where I'm looking at it going, okay, that's a genuinely nice picture. Okay, that's okay. That looks a bit... yeah. And then there are others I look at where there's like inspired by Van Gogh and stuff like that. And I look at this and I think, I'm not even sure I would stick that on my fridge if my child painted it at school. I don't know. I don't get art when it comes to, and art is very subjective. I mean, people like different types of art and it's all about how you interpret it. But I don't know. There's just something about some pieces I see in art galleries where I'm like, why? Why is this the big that's praised? I was like, if I can draw it better, then surely this doesn't make sense. And I suck at art. Okay, I cannot draw anything above stick men. It was kind of weird, but it was good to go round it. It was to tick it off my checkbox, frankly. There wasn't anything else in Amsterdam I felt like doing. And, Amsterdam is mostly about the history and culture anyway. So as much as I like the city in general, it's kind of like, there's only so much for me personally to do there. And no, we can't wander around cafes all day eating brownies. That's not kind of what it does. But Rotterdam Zoo was definitely, I think, the highlight. That was a very good zoo. Lots of lovely creatures there. I got some great photos and videos. All sorts of nice things there. And like I say, the aquarium tunnel that they got in there, that was really cool. They got polar bears. They got polar bears, sea lions, laughing thrushes, leopards, elephants, giraffes, zebras. They got all the usual staples, but they did have some unusual bits and bobs there as well. And there was just a lot more there than I thought. And you were able to get quite up close to some of the animals. There was like a little paddock where you could literally have kids crawl through a little tunnel and pop out in the center of a prairie dog. I think it was prairie dogs, I'm not sure. Something similar to that. But they basically looked like larger guinea pigs. But, they were basically able to like pop up in the middle of their enclosure. And I'm just like, can you do that anywhere else? I mean, are you allowed to get that close to animals? That just seemed a little bit, like, weird. But, hey, it entertained the kids. And, hell, if I could fit through that tunnel, I'd have done it myself. But, sadly, I'm too big and fat. But, yeah, it was just a nice little detox all around. Otherwise, generally, still gaming, still getting on with the blog. Health-wise, throat is mending. You know, I think the throat is in a good state. I mean, the occasional cold virus does flare it up a bit, but that's just winter for you. And we're getting into March, which means now it's the start of hay fever syndrome. And I do suffer from hay fever quite a bit, but I have tablets to high-strength antihistamines I take now. And last year, I didn't take them early enough, and so I had problems. They said to me, no, take them like late February, early March, like start taking them now, even if you don't suffer the main effects until June, start taking them. So it's like, yeah, hopefully that will curb the hay fever to a point by taking those. And physical wise, not too bad. Had some problem with my wrists lately. Left and right wrists have been a bit sore. I think too much gym work, too much typing on keyboards. I mean, I do it for a job and for social stuff and blog and everything. So I think they've just gotten a bit sore and like weak, especially my left wrist. But you know, I get it seen to every now and again. I'm at a physio. I use a guard splint. I don't know. I've got like a thing to put on my left arm if it starts getting a little too sore. But for the most part, it's not too bad. I can move it around and stuff. It's just the muscle weakness is there. It's kind of weird, but yeah, we'll just see how that progresses. I mean, I had the same thing this time last year, so I think it's just like an annual thing where my wrists just get a little bit sore and like, oh yeah, can you stop lifting weights now? But I don't do that much weightlifting. Most of the time I do jogs. So maybe it's a bit of RSI. Maybe it's like repetitive strain injury, or maybe I'm just getting old and my body's breaking to death. So that's the way. Okay, so what do we got on this show? Well, actually, just mentioned stuff to do with the blog first. So, hang on, why is it so thin? There we go, that's better, we want it blown up on the page. But, yeah, 22876 subscribers have kind of stagnated a little bit lately. You know, they haven't really risen as much as I would like, certainly compared to some other channels where, you know, bear in mind this channel doesn't get popped up by other channels. So if your channel is linked to by another channel, particularly one of the big ones, it pretty much doubles your subscription rate, because all the exposure you get on that channel then feeds into the other channel, which then props that up. It's just the way it works on the internet, and I don't have that luxury. But yeah, 22876, not bad. And somebody has told me not worry too much about subs. I'm not actually that worried about it, honestly. It's just, I like to report on it and just sort of, it's a good indicator of like, okay, are people actually still watching? But the main thing I'm interested in is obviously views and engagement, and that's still been pretty good. Yeah, we've just had the Last Light and World Wonders reviews have gone up, and they've done pretty well. I mean, 3.8, 3.5, you know, in 1,000 in terms of views. Plenty of comments. Not so many comments on World Wonders, but a decent amount on Last Light, the Roy Kennedy space game. I was kind of surprised by the two Beyond the Base game videos I did. I mean, Seven Wonders Architects Medals has got 2,000 views, and I thought that was going to get none because of how tiny that thing is and how many people even play the game. But hey, a lot of people are watching it. And Heavy Rain by Heat Pedal to the Metal, woohoo, 6,000. I mean, come on. That I did not expect. Beyond the Base game videos don't tend to do that well because of being an expansion, being more of a niche thing that you're reporting on. But Heat's got enough fans, so I guess it was pretty on the popular side. But yeah, a lot of people commenting as well is what I like to see. And of course, yeah, Wormspan. I mean, in fact, actually, yeah, it's almost catching up with Wormspan. That's actually kind of worrying on that side. Although Wormspan has a lot more comments because naturally the debate of which is better out of dragons and birds certainly generates quite a bit of comments. But yeah, it's all pretty good on that front, and there's more stuff to come. I want to do the top 10 regrets as a live stream. That should be quite fun. I just need to find time when I can do it, because the next few weekends are taken up with stuff, so I'm gonna have to try and do it as a midweek thing, and then I just need to plan it in advance. That'll be good. I will work on the top 10 gateway games in the last 5 years. I'm still debating if I should do it solo or if I should do it as a collaboration thing. It kind of depends, but you know, I'll probably do it solo on this occasion, but you know, at some point I do need to do that. But review-wise, I'm going to cover two off my box today. We'll get onto those later. And the two I've recorded are Septimer and Shipwrights of the North Sea Redux. So both of those are recorded. I've done my thoughts, and I will be, you know, reporting on those in the coming week. You know, the coming week or two. Yeah, you know, they will be released when I can release them, basically. I've got to edit them yet, and it was a bit of a shambles recording them because I kept getting interrupted. I kept having, you know, you know, my throat was drying out a lot, or I was just like getting confused with what I was saying. And obviously if I hesitate too much, I cut it and say, nope, we've got to try something else. And yeah, it was just a bit of a messy record session, but they just need to be tidied up in the editing room and all should be well. And other than that, I have something to look forward to, which is, I can't lift it up because it's not gonna happen. There is no way I can lift it up because it's a giant box. But I have finally managed to get my Tainted Grail Kings of Ruin pledge has come through. So, well, I say pledge. I did a preview video 2 years ago, and they sent me a pledge. I thought they were just going to send me the base game. They sent me the entire all-in pledge. So not only have I got this giant box of Kings of Ruin on my table right here, which I want to try out today if I get time. You know, I've got upgraded resources here. I've got sleeves. I've got the mounted hero miniatures. I've got the monster miniatures. It's like, I cannot lift up the box. I would have to use two hands. It would knacker me out. It is a heavy box. I unboxed it yesterday. Oh my word, there's a lot in there. So yeah, I mean, Kings of Ruin's not something I'm like desperate to try and review anytime soon, because I mean, it's a multi-chapter, massive hour campaign game. I'll probably just maybe I'll do a quick review halfway through, like as I'm going through the game. Certainly not when I finish it, because that's going to take forever. But, or maybe I'll just on the podcast just give updates and say how I'm doing when I'm going through the campaign. You know, that might help. Yeah, we'll see on that front. But yeah, plenty of stuff to come. So what are we getting on with on this show? Well, actually, is there a couple of other things? Nope. A couple of small bits to mention. Firstly, one game I am going to look at soon, which I'm kind of interested to see if it's any good or not, is The Veil of Eternity. The Veil of Eternity, I don't know a lot about. I haven't really watched much content on it, and I don't know if it's a game I'll like or not, but it's small. It's, you know, small, cheap, 2 to 4 players, 30 to 45 minutes. You know, it looks like something I could, you know, get behind. And see if it's any good, but it's taken ages to release in the UK. It recently did on Kiender, so I just literally snapped up a copy, and it's due to arrive at some point early this week. I'll try it out and see if it's any good. You know, I have no idea if I'm going to like it or not, but you know, this is literally just me going, I'm hearing a lot of buzz, and it's small, and it's fast. Therefore, could be a game that I would like to try, so it's not going to take like 5 hours to get into the first game like some big Euros lately, so you know, that'll be something to look forward to. And also, I wanted to just clarify something about my top 10 anticipated games list, because my anticipated games list was good. I mean, it was a fun list. It was successful. I forget how many people watched it. It was a live. Yeah, that's a point. Yeah, check out that live stream, because it didn't show up on the page. We have got 7,000 views for it. Not bad. I mean, you know, most top 10s I would like to get like 10,000 plus, but 7,000 is not a bad start for now. But yeah, I did a big long stream, solo stream with a Q&A at the end where I got people to suggest games that I should be looking forward to in 24. But yep, did a live stream of my top 10 anticipated games. But there was a game I forgot to mention. And, you know, people, I mean, I didn't forget to mention it because I'm looking forward to it. I'm not. But nobody asked a question in the chat about it, which maybe that speaks volumes for the game itself, the fact that nobody in my entire live stream brought this game up. But I did get asked a couple of times after the fact, you know, are you looking forward to this one or not? And I figured I might as well just sort of quickly clarify why it didn't hit the list right after I take a swig of nice decaf coffee. Yep, so the game I'm talking about is Inventions by Vital Acerda. Now, I've already talked about this on a podcast last year, just after the Games Expo, so probably around June time, I would have talked about this, because Mark Dainty brought the prototype, well, I'll say prototype, near-finished prototype, whatever, to Games Expo, and four of us played it. Mark, myself, Hilmar, you've seen on my channel before, and I forget who the fourth one was, sorry, but we played through this game. And there's some people that are looking forward to it. There are some people that are, you know, have got it, they're excited to get it out, you know, they're, you know, it's another Vital Acerda game, so it's going to be popular. I just didn't like it. I mean, I didn't hate it, but it was so average. You know, Vital Acerda games behind me, I've got a big, you know, they've got a massive sort of benchmark to go against. And why is one missing? Oh, yeah, because I took Kanban to game night at one point to see if somebody wanted me to teach them Kanban, and they didn't turn up. Great. Well, game night's tomorrow at Southampton, so if he turns up tomorrow, then I'll bring Kanban, and we can play it then. But, you know, that would be pretty sweet. But, yeah, Inventions, I just found it very meh. I mean, this is a... It feels like a Acerda game, but the theme here is completely wasted. You know, you don't really feel like you're inventing anything. It's just, it just feels really generic, and I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. You've got this, like, kind of worker placement thing with the spots, which is fine. That's what we see in everything. You've got this map where you send meeples around to various places. And depending which place you send it to, it allows you to invent, quote unquote, one of the little techs that are in the bottom and top rows here. And in order to do so, you have to... Honestly, I've actually forgotten a lot of the rules to it because it just blotted out of my memory so damn quick. But the main thing I just want to get across is, if you want to hear my detailed thoughts about the game, I suggest go check out my podcast that I did. In fact, maybe I can quickly find, while I'm chatting, the actual podcast in question, because that actually might be useful to people. But yeah, the thing was is that it felt like a Lacerda, but the theme just wasn't there. I mean, at the end, you've got this grid on your player board where you basically... you basically put tiles on, and the tiles score depending on like how you put them in rows and like next to each other or gaps, and there's no thematic reason why that exists. It is literally just a mechanic for mechanic's sake. So that's already just a little bit like, really, what is this? But even the mechanics you did during the game just didn't feel that fun. It was just like, meh, not a big fan. But let's see, right, okay, so what have we got here? So we got May 28th, that was before the Expo, so the UK Games Expo review. Okay, what did I do there? So, hot news, health update, my full rundown of my experience, as well as the games, both good and not so good, that I played. Right, so episode 73, UK Games Expo, all the details. Go watch that podcast. That is when I talk about inventions in more detail. And in fact, actually, I also talk about it in a bit more detail in a June 23 Kickstarter board games video. Remember when I used to do that Kickstarter series I don't do anymore? Fear of Missing Out, Crowd Surfing, June 23. You will find my thoughts on inventions there as well. So I say check out that one if this isn't being the best, most useful segment here. But, you know, I just... Overall, I found this game very generic, so I'm not looking forward to it. I'll give it another play, maybe, just to see if the second play it improves a bit, but everything about it just felt generic. Like, this is another Lacerda game. There's nothing unique here. There's no USP, no unique selling point. It's just generic, and I can't deal with generic in this board game industry right now. You need a game to really stand out, and if you're asking me to go through the front-loaded rules teach and 3 hours of my time to play this game, I'm gonna want it to blow my mind, not just be generic. You know, I can't really say much great about it, but then I can't really say much terrible about it either, apart from that stupid grid mechanic, as I mentioned. That's just rubbish. But, you know, it just, nothing about it really stood out, you know, compared to something like Kanban, you know, and Vinyos and Gallerist, which are all really unique and really set the theme right and all that. This one just didn't have the theme, and it just didn't give me anything that was that enthralling. So, as I say, check out those two things for those two episodes I did for more proper detailed thoughts about the mechanics, if that's what you want to know about. But yeah, that's why this didn't make my top 10 anticipated games list, and it's why I've got no intention really to look into it too much. I mean, a bit like Weather Machine, it's come, it's gone, whatever, just not that interested. Right, let's take a swig of a coffee. Lovely, lovely coffee. Seriously, are we literally putting Cheese Thief on the dashboard of this page as an advert? Who's playing Cheese Thief? Come on. But, you know, I wanted to do a couple of reviews, actually, because I really do need to cross these off the list. And I have been waiting to do these, and it's just like, well, when am I going to do them? It's like, fine, let's do them on the podcast. Let's talk a bit first. Ancient Knowledge. Now, this is a game that Z Garcia raves about, and I thought, you know what, we tend to gel on some card games whenever I see what he likes. You know, we like the Onirum universe, we like a few of the other, like Seven Wonders Duel, Bruna Kafala stuff. So I figured I'd give this one a shot, because it wasn't that expensive. This is from Yellow, and it's basically an engine builder card game. Yeah, we haven't seen a million of those, have we? But, you know, it's difficult to get innovation these days. But this is meant to be a 75-minute game, 2 to 4 players, where you create unique card combinations to keep your civilization alive. So the way it essentially works is you've got your player board, which allows you to place these artifacts on for special bonuses and powers. But what you're doing is that you are essentially playing these civilization cards above your board. They represent like different wonders and places. And what happens is that they have various effects, whether it's instant or when they fall off the edge or when they're constantly ongoing. But your hand of cards is essentially the currency. So you do have to get rid of cards and various other resources in order to actually play the cards. So it's got that cool thing of like what I like from San Juan and a few other games where, you know, your cards are your resources and other things as well. You know, that I quite like. But the, you know, what happens is that at the end of your turn, these cards slide to the left and eventually fall off your board. And when they're in different columns, they might have different effects. When they're next to different colors or next to certain other cards, they'll have other effects. And so when they fall off, it's effectively knowledge being lost. And as you play them, you get these little tokens that you put on the cards. And if you can't get them off before they fall off your board, they represent lost knowledge, and that's negative victory points. But you can work with them in through some other card combos. And that's kind of the gist. You basically keep going until a player has got so many cards have fallen off their board, and then you total up victory points based on various criteria, like, you know, what have you got in your lost pile, what have you got on your board, what's above your board, you know, any other like end game scoring stuff. But that's kind of the main gist. I mean, you have these little technology cards you can grab, which give you points or some special bonuses now and again. But that's kind of the gist of the game. It's basically this big deck of cards with all these different, like, mostly unique cards in them and various special powers that you can acquire. And you're juggling this selection of cards above your board, trying to create combos or a cool engine where putting them in certain columns, you know, card manipulation, because you don't have to put them in specific columns, you can discard cards to shift their position a little bit. Like, you know what, I want the orange one next to that blue one there because it gives me a bonus, and I want to make sure this green one stays on my board as long as possible, so I'm going to discard more cards and make sure it stays on the board for at least 6 rounds. You know, there's stuff like that you can do. Now, all of that sounds pretty good, and it is pretty good. But there's a couple of major caveats. The artwork is very nice. It's colorful. It looks cool on the table. The cards are good quality. It's not an expensive game. And, you know, the whole mechanic of going through, like, trying to juggle what's above your board is really cool. It's an interesting, you know, mechanic. I mean, take this card here on the screen here. So this one's telling me that I got to get rid of two cards to play the card. It goes in column 5. It's an orange type. It is the Ellora Caves from India. I mean, you do learn a bit about some of these wonders, actually. I mean, I can't remember if the rule book gives you history knowledge on them. It doesn't tell you on the card. There's no flavor text. But, you know, makes you aware of a few more cool places in the world you never heard of. But this tells me it's worth zero victory points. But at the end of the game, I'll get a point for every orange card in my past, which is basically when they fall off your board. And it's got 3 of those knowledge tokens on that I have to get rid of. So this is the card anatomy, basically. And, you know, the whole juggling of this is really good fun. You can create some really cool card combos. You know, you can get some really good engines going, and it's just a fun puzzle. But a couple of things get in the way. Firstly, yes, there is an element of luck of the draw, because you are drawing cards from a deck, and you may just draw stuff that's brilliant for you, and you may draw stuff that's bad for you. That is fine, and it wouldn't be so bad if it was a short game. Unfortunately, it isn't, because this game goes from 2 to 4 players. I can't imagine why I would play this with more than 2 players. And even at 2 players, it's still not a short game. This game takes a while. It said 75 minutes on the thing. It will go longer than that if you play this with 4 players, I guarantee you. You know, because you've got to do everything on your turn before the next player. So there's a lot of downtime present, and the game just drags on and on and on when you have more players. So I don't feel incentivized to play this in the multiplayer game, and I can't get out for 2 players all the time because I don't tend to have setups where I have 2 of us. Remember, I live alone, so 2-player games are notoriously difficult for me to get played. And that just kind of makes this one a bit of a problem for me, because I really enjoy the mechanics of it. I just think that the fact that I'm restricted on the player count really kind of kills it. Now, there is a saving grace on the horizon, because this game is actually getting an expansion some point later this year. Let's see, look up expansions. I'll tell you about it here. So, Ancient Knowledge Heritage. Yes, Ancient Knowledge Heritage. Coming out in 24, so we hopefully get it this year. 30 to 120 minutes. That kind of worries me when an expansion has a time frame like that, but still. However, you'll notice here it says 1 to 4 players. Yes, this one is coming with more cards, more tech cards, so it's like, great, you know, we make the decks bigger. But now it has 16 solo mode cards that allow you to play a campaign. I do hate the idea of having to play it in a campaign. That's annoying. I wish you could just play a general solo game against a bot. But I will take a solo mode. You know, I will just take a solo mode, period. Because I think this game was best played. It was designed, I think, so that it should be a solo mode. Because there's very little player interaction in the game. And the only player interaction you have is like a few cards that are actually nasty cards. Like they hurt the opponent. And I don't know, that just feels weird. You know, you've got a few of these cards in a deck that's huge. And you might just get unlucky and get hosed by a bunch of them all the time. And it really does set you back. So I almost feel like I want to take them out. I'm almost tempted to house rule them out. But the problem is if I do that, I upset the balance of what cards are in the deck. Unless there's an even Steven amount of them, in which case, fine. But yeah, that's just a bit of a pain as well with the multiplayer aspect. So I am totally down for trying this as a solo mode, and it means that I haven't got rid of the game. The game itself, I would probably rate a 6 out of 10, above average. It's, you know, it's got some very fun mechanics in it, so I can't deny that it has a very good engine builder system, and the puzzle that you're solving is really cool. But, and it's cheap, and it's pretty good for its cost, but I would say it's definitely a seal of endorsement if you're going to play it with 2 players. 2 players, I'd probably say 7 out of 10. You know, that's really the only way to play it. In fact, yeah, maybe 6 out of 10 is harsh. No, I'd give it a 7. Actually, I'd give it a 7 out of 10. I'd give it a seal of endorsement. 7 out of 10, it's a good game if you play it 2 players. I think if you play it 3 or 4, though, the rating really drops. I mean, we're talking 6, 5 out of 10. 6 out of 10 with 3 players, 5 out of 10 with 4 players. This game is just not designed to be played multiplayer. But if you're going to only play it 2 player, I think it's a 7 out of 10 and a pretty solid card game. Will it suddenly be really, really good when I can play it solo? Well, that remains to be seen, and it's why I'm not going to sell the game yet. I'm going to keep it somewhere in storage, you know, just keep it handy, wait for the solo expansion to come out, try the solo expansion, and then if the solo expansion really elevates it, I will tell you about it, and I'll do a Beyond the Base Game video on it, but if it doesn't, then maybe I still will do a Beyond the Base Game video on it, but I will then sell the game at that point, because it's not like it cost me a lot of money to acquire, it's a cheap game, so sweet coffee. Yeah, so it's not too it's not that bad. But yeah, 7 out of 10, but really stick to 2 players. It just doesn't work above that. You know, but it is a solid puzzle card game. So it was a bit disappointing and it has that restriction on player count, but you know, mechanics-wise, really good. If only they could have just worked in some ways to speed the game up. That's its Achilles heel of the game. Alright. Next up, Dune Uprising. Yes, I thought I was going to do a full video on this, but I just have not got that time. So I figured I'll talk about it in the podcast, because frankly, there's not a lot to say about it. You know, my thoughts on Dune Imperium have changed since the review I did. And the review is, spoiler alert, probably one of the ones I would stick on the regret list. You know, because I gave that an 8 out of 10 when I first reviewed Dune Imperium. It would most certainly have dropped to a 6 by now. The game is severely overrated on Board Game Geek and by players, but the, you know, I would probably give it a 6, above average. There's some fun to be had, and mainly I will only play it if you put in both expansions, particularly the second expansion. The first one I could take or leave, but the second one that has those extra cards you can grab, and the sort of, what's it called, the medical cloning gene thing or whatever it is, that board, that I actually liked fine, and I figured I would play it with that expansion on its own, or with that and the other expansion, but I won't play base Dune Imperium again, it's just not worth it. When I saw this, though, I rolled my eyes, because this felt like the biggest cash grab ever, and we'd only just said things like Everdell Far Shore and other games like that come out, which were blatant cash grabs as well, and this one just felt like, hang on a minute, you've barely had this game come out for what, a couple of years, you know, a few years, you know, not that long, and you've already released 2 expansions, and then all of a sudden, you're basically saying, ah, reset, we're going again. Okay, isn't that just a little bit of a kick in the teeth to the fans of Dune Imperium? I don't know. And how much are you going to change it? And okay, you made the cover look better, but let's face it, the original cover looks like garbage, so that's not exactly much of a benchmark. But they haven't changed any of the artwork in the game, so the game itself still looks a bit garbagey, I'm sorry, but there is nothing beautiful about that picture. That picture still makes the game look horrible. So you would think that if they were going to do a second edition, a proper second edition, they would really make the art look gorgeous. But nope, it's the same looking game. So this isn't even a second edition. This I can best describe as Dune Imperium 1.25 or something. It really is such a small change they've made. Now, the changes do have impact, but still, it's not enough to really say, okay, this is going to be the, you know, the real need for the change. And yeah, spoiler, and one thing I do mention, I did watch Dune Part 2. I didn't like the first part, it bored me to death. I went to watch the second film because they're £5 cinema tickets here, and I figured, why not? Let's just go watch it for cheap. Maybe when it gets to the main plot, it will improve. It did improve when it got to the main plot. It still took about an hour and a half to get to the main plot, but as soon as, I won't spoil, but, you know, as soon as a character goes through a bit of a transformation, the film started switching on, and a bit more of the background intrigue with the whole Bene Gesserit and stuff like that really started coming through, and I thought, ah, yeah, actually, I'm interested now. I want to see what happens with these characters. But still, there's a lot of panning shots of deserts. It still takes an hour and a half to get to the point. There's still a lot of plot holes in the movie, like, why didn't you do this, or what? How could you have not figured this out earlier and stuff? And then the ending is still really anticlimactic. I mean, it builds up this massive battle, and I'm sorry, but pretty much what you see in the trailer is the battle. It really is a bait and switch. I was not pleased with the way that film ended. It was such a bait and switch. But, you know, 5 out of 10, average. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked here. So, you know, the Dune Imperium Uprising is essentially the same as Dune Imperium. And I'm not going to explain the same rules as Dune Imperium. I've got a video that talks about it. By all means, check that out. But it's basically a worker placement game. You go to these spaces, you get the resources, you participate in combats with other players, and you're trying to get to about 10 victory points before everybody else does. So it's a kind of a race to 10. That's kind of the basic gist of the game. So what exactly has changed here to make it so much of a, is it a kind of a cash grab opportunity? I mean, God, people have had to go out of their way to try and sort out the storage and paint up the sandworms and that. But let's see if we can get a... that's not a bad picture, actually. So with this, the main thing that's changed, you've got three locations that are now surrounded by a shield wall. You can potentially break through the shield wall. Great. Okay, that's one thing. All right, let's talk about the bigger changes, right? The two biggest changes that the game has, sandworm units and spies. Spies are actually an interesting part in the new system. Basically, you can, some effects let you put these little spy tokens down, and when the effects like trigger off, you can take those spies off to either get more cards or allow yourself to go to an occupied space. So it kind of is a way to get past the whole being blocked out of the worker placement thing. It's a small inclusion. There's not much more to it than that, but I approve of that being in the game. I think that is something that is genuinely a nice addition and not difficult to teach, but it allows you a bit more flexibility and not just like, oh, I just got blocked out, well, there's my whole round ended. You know, you have ways around it now. The sandworm units, I'm less keen on. Sandworm units can be brought into combat. You can see there's one being prepped here, but in order to do so, you have to get these maker hooks or whatever from one of these worker spaces. Yeah, the things they use to grapple onto a worm in the movies, and you bring them into battle. And I forget if they add power. I think they add power. Yes, they add 3 power. Yeah, you can see down here. So a sword adds 1, cube adds 2, sandworm adds 3, right? But, I mean, you'd think it would add more than 3. I mean, for crying out loud, one character or one little group of people is worth 2 attack power. Pretty sure a giant freaking sandworm is more powerful than that. I mean, watch the movie. You know, what are you supposed to do against the giant sandworm of death? I feel like it would just be auto-win at that point. Unless you have something that could literally shoot and slice through the worm in one go. Which, yeah, I mean, hang on, they got las guns in this universe. Yeah, and I know the stupid thing that they don't establish in the movies, like when you shoot shield with a las gun, you get an atomic explosion, which, why don't you establish that in the movies? I feel that's a big, massive plot hole that you really need to make clear to the audience. But, you know, sandworms don't carry shields. So why don't you just las gun the worm? Surely the las gun would be powerful enough to carve a worm in half. I mean, has anybody watched the new series of Trigun? Yeah, if you know the character I'm on about, you know what I'm talking about. Why can't you just do that to a sandworm? But I digress. So the sandworm basically doubles the reward for the combat. And, you know, that means that, let's say, what card we got here, for example. So you can get two spice and a spy if you win it, and as well as controlling an area. So if you have the sandworm, you get two spy effects and four spice. But you could also get two victory points instead of one victory point. You could get six water instead of three water. You know, it essentially doubles the reward. And the problem with that is that it makes combat even more important than it once was. I mean, if you thought combat was already the defining way to win in original Dune Imperium, which cough, cough, it is, you know, then it's just been made, it's just been turned up to 11 because you get these sandworms and you could suddenly catapult in victory points if they're played on certain combat cards. And bear in mind, you're supposed to be really hunting for those victory points in this game. To be able to just suddenly get two out of nowhere with a simple, like, combat, or possibly even more than two. I forget if there's a card in there that gives you two VP and now you can get four. I can't, it's like, I forget if that's in there, but the rewards you get from the sandworms in a combat just really just make combat the bread and butter of how to win. I mean, you want to try and play this in the deck buildy fashion where you try and get all the spices right cards or whatever it's called and, you know, win that way. It's not going to happen. You know, everybody gets victory points through alliances with the various factions. That's normal. But to, you know, to try and do that by itself, you won't get enough points. The sandworm combats will just give you what you need. And so it means you can't ignore combat. I mean, it was tricky enough to ignore it in the previous game. But now, if you try to play this whole game ignoring combat, you are really playing with a big disadvantage. And if you still manage to win somehow, then I can only imagine that the other players were blind and, you know, very, very, very distracted because they should not have lost that easily. It just, I wish they didn't have them in there. I mean, I get the idea of having a sandworm in the combat to add more power. I'm fine with that. But doubling the rewards, I think, doesn't work. I'd rather just have the sandworm as an extra powerful unit, like an improved dreadnought. But to make it double the rewards, not a fan. And that's the changes. Yeah, that's pretty much the changes. I mean, that purple board you see in the top left there, that's an expansion. That's the immortality expansion, so none of that's relevant. So, what else has changed? Not a lot. Yeah. You want to know why people think this is a bit of a cash grab? Because that's literally the changes. I mean, we'll go through the... Here's the rule book, right? So, this is the rule book you can get off BGG, right? In the book, in the contents, there's this little bit here that says, play Dune Imperium. Look for this symbol. It highlights differences with Uprising. Let's just have a quick scroll through the book and find all the instances where that appears. To first page, second page. Oh, there's one. There is no Mentat. And a little bit of setup changes. Yeah, yeah, there's no Mentat. The Mentat space doesn't exist now. Big whoop, okay? There is no Mentat agent in Uprising. Yet we know, you already explained that in the setup. Stop repeating yourself to try and sound different. Factions intrigue, no, nothing there. Round structure, no, player turns fine, agent turn. There you go. There are additional board spaces requiring two influence with a faction and a new agent icon spy. That doesn't tell me anything, and it's pretty obvious when you look at the board. Player turn. Alright, here we go. Sandworms are a new type of unit. Detailed in the final three paragraphs at the left, the shield wall protects against their use, and you gotta get Maker Worms. So there's your first main change here. This page where it talks about sandworms, okay? So there's your one main change. Sorry, the removal of a Mentat is not a major change. Spies. So here you go. Spies are a new element of the game detailed above. I mean, it's these things are repeating themselves. They've already mentioned about sandworms and spies, and now they're actually explaining them in detail. But those are the two big differences that I've just explained, right? Let's see how many more times this thing's mentioned. Setting your strength is no longer an explicit step between resolve, reveal effects, and cleanup. Set strength at any point. That's not a major change of the game. That's simply a streamlining of a rule, which, let's face it, people did anyway. Don't consider that to be a big change between the two editions. That doesn't count. Combat. Battle icons and sandworm reward doubling. Yes, we've mentioned about sandworms already, so no. Contracts. Oh yeah, contracts. Well, contracts is a Chome module. It's a mini expansion, so it's not even like in the main game. And yeah, you could argue that this is a bit of a difference from the original game. But all these contracts are is you basically set up a bunch of these little tiles, and they have a condition on them, like go here, get a reward, and that's it. Yeah, yeah. You gain the contract, and then when you fulfill it, you gain the reward. That's it. wow, whoopee. I mean, that's literally it. And it's nice. You might as well throw it into your first game. It says play a couple of games before you to familiarize yourself. I'm sorry, the Chome module is so easy to use, you do not need to play a game beforehand. It is that simple. So put it in. So, okay, three changes. Clarifications, Chome module, we've already explained that. Combining expansions, and end of rulebook. So there we go. So all the changes, basically, sum up are three things, right? The Chome module, the sandworms, and the spies. That's it. 1.25. It is, everything else is the same. The way you deck build, the way you do worker placement, the way the victory points are done, a lot of the cards, you know, that, you know, they're similar. So it's, there really isn't a lot of change. And when it talks about the compatibility side of things, you know, it's not even that easily compatible. I mean, you know, combining it with base Dune Imperium is fiddly as hell here. I mean, we recommend you don't add the conflict cards. There's no Mentat, so you've got to remove this particular intrigue card. And then you can shuffle all other stuff in that. But, you know, I can't see why people would buy this when they've already got base Dune Imperium and all the other expansions. You know, I mean, look at this, adding Rise of Zix. You've got to go through all this here, this paragraph of, you know, several paragraphs of text to make it compatible. Immortality is the easiest one to do. All you got to do is just cover it with, yeah, you cover it with an overlay and that's it. Yeah, immortality is seamless with this one, actually. So you could get Uprising and Immortality and the game would still work pretty fine. But why are you getting this if you own everything? That's the thing. The game itself is fine. I mean, it's no more interesting than before. I mean, maybe it's slightly better because of the spies. The Chome module is whatever. It's just contracts. And the sandworms, I actually think, are a detriment. So as much as the spies elevate the game, I think the sandworms detract the game. So it's kind of offsetting each other. But I mean, which one would I play out of the two if you gave me the base set only? I would probably still play Uprising. So maybe I could bump it up to a 7. But still, I mean, you're paying a lot of money for these games. They're not cheap. The Dune Imperial games have always sold at a bit of a premium. And you're not getting good components. You're not getting good artwork. You're still getting the same budget quality in the game itself. I mean, people have made it, they've made their copies look good at great expense. Just because you can buy upgrade packs does not alleviate it. And even then, the upgrade packs aren't even that great. You get a bunch of miniatures. Great. You still have sucky artwork on the board. I mean, so what exactly are you supposed to do about that? And then there is a 6-player game that you can play, a 3-versus-3 team thing. I've not played that, so I'm not reviewing it based on that front. But all I've heard about it is that some people go, yeah, it's fine. But they also mentioned, oh yeah, it took us about 3.5 hours. I'm sorry, I'm not playing Dune Imperium for 3 hours plus. I mean, the game can already go to 2.5 to 3 hours when you play a normal 4-player game of it sometimes, particularly if you play it in epic mode. I'm sorry, I'm not playing a 3v3 for 3.5 hours, you know, for Dune. Not happening. So that mode is not interested in me. And let's say, I mean, how many people have got 6 people that are desperate to play it in that mode? I mean, that just seems crazy. But, you know, take this review for what it is. I've not played the mode. I've no intention of playing the mode. So I'm just ignoring that bit. If it's really great, then by all means, put it in the comments. Let me know your thoughts on the 6-player mode so that other people can get an idea. But other than that, that's kind of it. The game just doesn't offer anything else new. It's the same game with a couple of tweaks, one that's good, one that isn't, and I can't really change my rating before. I'm giving this one a 6 out of 10. In fact, I almost feel like I should make it lower just because I think the audacity of releasing this with its price tag is a little bit obscene as well. But the game is still fine. It's still overrated, but it is still fine. I'll go with 6 out of 10. I mean, I think out of the base games, this is the better of the two. I don't like the fact that it's more combat-focused, but at least this one makes it blatantly obvious it's combat-focused as opposed to the base game where it's a bit more subtle. And I would say maybe the cards you can acquire are a bit more interesting in this one with the spies bit included. So I would certainly, if you are brand new to Dune Imperium, grab this as a base copy. But if you own Dune Imperium with the 2 expansions, I just don't see any reason why you would get this other than just being a massive completionist. You know, that's kind of my thoughts on there. So, yeah, 6 out of 10. It's above average, you know, and that's kind of where I sit on Dune Imperium as a general thing. Right. I think I'm... Oh, I've got time to mention... I say my throat is starting to dry up a little bit. I need to be a little bit careful. I'm going to mention very briefly. It's a very brief thing. It's just something I want to chat about. I don't want to do a massive segment on it, though, because my throat is drying. Basically, Board Game Co. released a recent video on the idea of critical reviews not being honest. Something like that. I think it was critical reviews aren't honest, or negative reviews aren't honest. It was something like that. But, you know, I'm not talking about that specific video here, you know, but you want to go watch it, go watch it. But I have apprehensions when this kind of thing gets released online, because what it tends to do is that it creates a bit of a civil war in the board game consumer and creator industry. As soon as this topic of discussion gets made, there's always two factions. There's no third faction. It's literally, right, the people who are obsessed with positivity. They want nothing but positive reviews. They want everyone to be happy. Everything is awesome. Everybody share the content. Everybody let's love and hug and all that stuff, you know, and... You know, there's that faction, okay? And what they will tend to do is that anytime somebody is slightly negative on a game, and we're talking slightly negative, bear in mind that the industry has been brainwashed to the point where there's no 10-point scale anymore. There's only 8 plus, 8, 9, and 10. Anything 7 or lower is garbage in a lot of people's eyes. And, you know, have you noticed on my videos lately, I do this, the actual 10-point scale at the end of my videos with the verdict. That's had good feedback so far, and I really like the fact I've changed that. Basically, it illustrates exactly what my rating means. So, you know, when I give something a 5 out of 10, I am not saying it's garbage and terrible and you should avoid it. I'm saying it's 5 out of 10 average. There is such a thing in between good and terrible, you know, and I've got those descriptions there. So, that's had some good feedback. But... the thing is that you've got this crowd, so that good faction. And then you've got the other side, who take things a little bit more to the other extreme, which is there is so, like, too much positivity, therefore we need to have people who will really slam games, you know, we need to be negative about these things, point out the problems, stop being all happy, knowing I can't trust your opinion because you are super positive about everything, therefore, you know, you are the one I will trust because you speak your mind and, you know, you are talking negative about something, therefore you are honest. You need to get into the middle of these two things, because both factions aren't the way I want to be or where you should be from an extremist point of view here, because my view is very simple. It's a simple concept here. This isn't something that needs a ton of discussion. It's pretty rudimentary when you think about it. In order to be a reviewer, to be a critic, to be a trusted, honest critic, you have to be willing to give pros and cons about everything. Doesn't matter if it's a game that you absolutely hate or a game that you love to bitch, you have to be able to point out pros and cons. And that is what I try to do in my reviews. You know, I get labeled with the whole negative Nancy type thing. I mean, that's not officially that phrase, but I get called some pretty trollish things. I mean, there's certainly a couple of people on Board Game Co's video that were trolling me behind my back. I'm glad I had a look through those comments and noticed those people who go, oh yeah, this guy just talks negative about everything, therefore hate him. It's like, but I knew better than to start a war, so I just left it at that. It's like, for every one troll that there is, there's hopefully 10 people that like what you do, so take that view. But the thing is that I try to do, like, balanced reviews, and I get a lot of good feedback lately. I've had lots of people come forward and say, like what you do, like your honesty, like the fact that you will do both and good. They don't even have to agree with the views. The whole point of watching my stuff is not that you agree with everything I say. If you did, you would literally just be sycophants. You'd just be sycophants and a cult at that point. I'm not asking you to do that. And certainly I do notice a few of those around, but still, not like for my channel, but you know, I do notice a few people that are like, oh my God, can we convince you of anything? But the idea I'm just saying is that you don't have to agree with the views I do. You just have to be entertained or get an idea of where I'm coming from. Make your own decision when you watch it. You might watch me rag on a game for its flaws, and all those flaws might be positives for you. In which case, the video is still being useful because you know whether you will like or dislike a game based on what I've told you. I'm just trying to give you the facts about the game. And I'm also trying to give the pros and the cons. So something like Ark Nova, spoiler alert, top game on my top 100 list, okay? One of my favorite game I've been playing lately. I love Art Nova to bits. It's not flawless. There is no such thing as a flawless game. If I give something a 10 out of 10, I'm not saying it's flawless. I'm saying it's a benchmark. Like, if you're going to compare, if you're going to talk about games of this genre, mechanic, theme, designer, that kind of thing, this is the benchmark we're comparing against for other games to meet up to. That's what a 10 out of 10 means. The game can still have problems. Ark Nova is still too long. It is a very long game with four players, especially if people don't know what they're doing or are slow. It can drag. I tend to play it with three max, or play it solo on Board Game Arena and stuff. So there is that aspect. It's not the best looking game in the world. You know, the money component I always replace with poker chips or metal coins. It's always a factor. You know, the cards look great. I love the photographic imagery on the cards and the graphic design. But, you know, the board isn't a massive looker, nor the rest of your map. You know, it's a fairly basic image. So, yeah, I mean, art is not fantastic other than the cards. And even then, I wouldn't say it was fantastic. It's just colourful and nice looking. So there are issues, and there's an element of luck of the draw that can come out sometimes, because you are drawing cards from a deck, you might just not find what you want to use. It's not a flawless game, but the positives overshadow the negatives for me, hence I love it to bits. But I'm still going to tell you about the problems of the game. Sentinels in the Multiverse, fantastic co-op deck builder. Co-op card game, right? There's a lot of stuff you've got to absorb in terms of, like, stuff on cards. It can get pretty finickety at times, okay? There definitely is a bit of a player scaling thing where it definitely works better if you play it with four. Play it with five, it's too easy. Play it with three, it can be a little bit harder. But 3 to 4 players is the way you got to do it. And, you know, there are flaws with all games. I'm going to tell you about those flaws. And it may be that I don't like the game. It may be that it's a 4 out of 10, a 5 out of 10. I mean, what have I reviewed recently? That's a bit like that. Evacuation, 5 out of 10. Ticket to Ride Legacy, 4 out of 10. Not going to lie, one of the two games I mentioned earlier in this video that I've got in the editing room, I'm not a big fan of. I'll leave you to guess which one. You know, there's some games lately that I have not rated as highly. What else have I done, actually? I've got a thing. Let's go back to my YouTube details thing. So, well, Inventions, I would give that a 5 out of 10. That would definitely be only an average game for me. But, okay, let's see. Let's go back to the very first page and see. So this is slightly spoilery, but I would have hoped by now you would have seen some of these videos. I definitely gave some flaws about Wormspan, despite it being a generally good game. Mythwind, 5 out of 10. You know, that one I only gave an average review. Age of Rome, 6 out of 10. Anything else I gave quite low? No, I like Scholars. Virtual Revolution, I think I only gave that a 5 or a 6 out of 10. Apiary, 5 or 6 out of 10. I think it was a 5 out of 10, or was it a 6? I can't remember. But yeah, I wasn't as big a fan of that. Did not like Ticket to Ride Legacy. Evacuation, already mentioned. Let's see, those I gave positive reviews for. Imperial Miners was fine, I didn't give that a massive review. Kutna Horror had some stuff that disappointed me in the game, it brought the rating down a little bit. Forest Shuffle, 6 out of 10, I talked about the balance issues that game has, you know, so there are issues there. And so I'm not shy to talk about the cons of a game, and some people will label that as, oh, you're just too negative about games. Maybe I am a little bit picky on games, I mean, I'm not going to say it's untrue, but at the end of the day, thousands of games come out every year. I'm not going to just take every single one of those games that comes out and goes, fantastic, amazing. And this is where I stand when I think about what other channels do, because I mentioned the whole Civil War thing between the good faction and the negative faction, and I want to be somewhere in the middle. But it also does create a bit of a civil war in content creator land, because obviously there are content creators who objectively only talk about positive stuff. I won't watch those channels because I don't want to know about just positive all the time. Because if you release a video and I see a thumbnail that says reviewing Forest Shuffle, I know you love the game. I've already been spoiled because I know it's your channel. You're talking about it on a video. Therefore, I know it's good. Well, from your perspective, I can't really trust the opinion on that one. And so there are some channels out there where, you know, they're highly rated channels, you know, highly sought after channels, where I watch them and I think, you're just mostly positive. And even when you are negative, it's very minor and you're glossing over it and you're just ending on a high note. And, you know, thumbnails are clickbaity to say, fantastic game, or they did it, or this is great, you know, and I don't like that kind of thing. So that's a separate side topic, the whole clickbait thing. But but that's the thing. If it's too positive, I probably won't watch it. Now, that's not to say I only watch channels where everybody rags on the game, but there are certainly some channels out there that I think do a better job of, you know, getting a balance between talking about the good stuff of a game, talking about the bad stuff of a game, not glossing over the bad stuff, not just rubbing it across the, brushing it across the carpet and just going, yeah, there's some flaws, but think about how great this is. You know, no, you've got to draw attention to the bad stuff when it happens. And so those would be the ones that I would give more stock to. But there's not many of them out there. Not many that I can get behind. So, yeah, there is that problem. But it's just the fact that, you know, I don't like it when this topic gets brought up, though. Because content creators will go at each other's throats, you know, the consumers will go at each other's throats, and it always just sparks a massive war debate. I mean, look on Facebook where this video has been shared out, and you can already look at the comments and you can see you can just see the sparks flying between the various parties, and stuff gets said, you know, words get thrown around, and it's not good for the industry, I don't think, to dwell on this topic and make it like an excuse for everybody to just argue with each other. You know, the concept is simple. You've got to be an honest critic, point out the pros and cons, and not be swelled by relationships or getting a review copy or some other kind of reward. You know, I could happily talk bad about a game that I got a review copy for, okay? I mean, I gave Mythwind, I gave a 5 out of 10, right? Average, which doesn't say it's a terrible game, but it says I didn't particularly like it that much either. But the thing is, I got that as a review copy. You know, they actually emailed me and said, would you like a review copy? I was like, yeah, cool, I'd like to try this game out. It looks interesting. Tried it, only thought it was average. And I'll be very surprised if I hear anything again from that point on, frankly, because, well, you know, you give me a game and then I don't rate it that highly, that tends to get you blacklisted. And I'm not saying they have. I'm just saying this has happened in the past. There have been some designers, some publishers in the past, some of them aren't around anymore, but, you know, some of them have in the past gone, you know, you, not necessarily even direct, well, actually a couple were direct to my face, but, you know, others will be like, you know, well, we've sent you this, great, yeah, we look forward to it. And then you don't give it that positive a review, and then you never hear anything again, because it's normal. I mean, they're businesses, they need to make money. And they see content creators as free advertising, basically, because the cost of giving a reviewer, even an all-in pledge for something like Kings of Ruin or something. I mean, this isn't a review copy. I did the preview video, gave my honest thoughts, pros and cons about the game, and they sent me all of this. I didn't even ask for all-in. You know, I would have been happy with the base game, but they sent me everything. I'm grateful, but that doesn't sway my opinion of the game. And getting a review copy doesn't sway my opinion at all. You know, you give me a free copy, it probably costs you like £5, a tenner or whatever. Have you seen advertising budgets for companies? I'm an accountant, all right, a tax accountant. I see a lot of profit and loss accounts. Believe me, advertising is a pretty substantial cost in the profit and loss account. You can pay an absolute crap ton for advertising and promotion. So giving a reviewer a review copy, even giving 100 reviewers review copies, really doesn't cost that much money for a publisher. Now, if you're an indie publisher and you barely print out 200 copies of the game flat out, and you're literally just two of you and you're doing it all yourself, that's a different story I can get behind, where it would be more expensive to do that. But if you're one of the main players, you know, you're Cool Mini or not, you're Awakened Realms, you're a big Kickstarter company that's made tons, you're Stonemaier, for example. If you're one of the big players in the industry, review copies really don't cost anything for you. I'm sorry, they just do not. And so, you know, you shouldn't, you know, they do see it as essentially cheap advertising. Because at the end of the day, what do? They give you a review copy. probably cost them a tenner or something to make it. Well, actually, maybe a bit more than that, but let's say 25 quid or whatever. Yeah, let's say 25 quid to give you this, right? And the other person has to play the game multiple times, learn all the rules, get to grips with it all, do the plays that take time, do the video, do the recording, do the editing, get it uploaded, and maintain comments throughout. The amount of work that the other person is doing compared to simply just giving them a review copy is substantially greater, frankly. It's a bigger cost in terms of time and effort. So, you know, a review copy is not much to ask, but I guarantee if we were doing it as a paid thing, if you had to, like you, where you pay advertising agents to do ads for you and stuff like that, if we actually properly charged what the time frame is for doing a video review of a product as an advert, I guarantee you the cost would be a lot greater than simply giving us a review copy of a game. Right, it would be a lot greater. But we don't ask for that. We just get the copy of the game and we're happy about that. So, you know, that's all it is. We have to be able to give our honest thoughts on it, though, if we don't like it. Just because you gave me something for free doesn't mean I like it, okay? You can give me a bag. You can give me a bag of dog poo or whatever or something for free and go, here you go. Yay, fresh from my dog. Yeah, I'm not going to like it. It's just because you give me something, just because it's free doesn't make it a thing I want. So, I know that's a bit of a sicky example, but you get what I'm saying. So, I'll wrap it up at that stage, but it's all I'm saying is, you know, people will have their channels that they watch and who they like. And I get some very positive feedback from a lot of you out there who talk about like the stuff I talk honestly and give them the pros and cons. And, you know, whether you agree with me or not, you still like to watch it. And that's the main thing. And I'm glad you do. And it makes my day because every time I read one of the troll comments on other videos where they're slagging me off behind my back, knowing that there's comments like that that come through as well, it just makes up for it. And it really does stop me from hitting a kind of semi-burnout situation where, because there have been times, you know, where you read some of these things and you do ask yourself, why do I bother doing this? I'm getting on to 40 years old and I'm doing this and I'm fighting an uphill battle against ones who literally can just skyrocket to fandom because they're super positive or whatever. It's like, why do I bother? But then I get those feedback comments and it makes my day. And then I realize, right, this is why I do it. This is why I do it, how I do it, and why I do it like this. And, you know, it really does help from a, you know, an anxiety and a confidence boost to get those. So thank you very much for those. But yeah, just be sure to trust, find the channels with the people you trust. Watch those videos, use those to make your decisions, and all will be well. You know what you trust in terms of a review. You're not stupid. you've got brains. So you can make up your own minds. But I'm worried that if this debate already happened a while ago where it sprung up and everybody was at each other's throats, I hope that this video and others maybe that are done similarly as a reaction to it. I mean, I know, ironic, I'm talking about it, so I guess that's, you know, preaching to the choir on that. But, you know, I just hope it doesn't spawn another civil war in industry as everybody goes at each other arguing about this. It's the way it is, and I would like things to change, but I don't think it is going to change. You know, the ones that are popular, who do it their way, super positive, aren't going to suddenly turn a 180 and start doing things more negatively. It's not going to happen. You know, it's just the way. I don't know. I'm rambling a bit. And my throat's drying. So I'm going to wrap it up there. Be interested to know your thoughts in the comments, by all means. You know, what do you think of the whole fiasco? Is it a waste of time? Is it worth debating? Which side do you swing to? Are you in the middle? Are you in one of the extreme sides? You know, by all means, let us know your thoughts. Keep it civil, as always. You know, we want civil comments. You know, if you start trolling, you will get deleted. But yeah, civil discussions will be, you know, greatly appreciated to try and read. But yeah, thank you everybody. So thanks everybody for listening to this podcast, and hope you have a good Mother's Day. Again, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. And until next time, regardless of which side of the argument you fall on, it's still only a game, so just try to have fun, be respectful, and love games and love everyone else. You know what? Take care. Bye for now, everyone.